Hello and welcome to Drilling Insight. I'm Jeremy Verduzco, host and editor of The Driller Magazine. I'm joined today by drilling trainer, the driller writer, and co-host Brock Yorty. How's it going this morning, Brock?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Jeremy?
I'm excellent. A little cloudy here, but I think the weather's trending up. I'm happy to see that. Glad to be getting outside again. So on today's show, we welcome Brian to Spain. Thanks for being on the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me today.
And so Brian is president and co-owner of UMA Geotechnical Construction, a ground engineering firm based in Colfax, North Carolina, and serving the Mid-Atlantic. He has a background in construction management, geotechnical engineering, and strategic planning. Now, we brought him on the show to talk about growth in modern construction companies and challenges and opportunities in the construction drilling sector. So, Brian, let's start with our usual opener question. Did you choose this industry or did it choose you?
Well, I don't think anybody chooses drilling as an industry. I don't think you're sitting there with your career counselor, you know, in high school and, you know, you blurt out, I'm going to be a driller someday. I think that this industry really chooses people, you know, more than people choose it.
Give our audience a little sense of UMA. What type of work are you guys doing and for whom?
So we primarily work for the Department of Defense. Secondary to that would be Department of Transportation, such as the North Carolina Department of Transportation, TDOT, VDOT, and entities like that. Most all of our work is through government entities in some way. We're primarily a subcontractor to prime contractors, although we are a general contractor and we can work in that sense if needed. So if an owner of a property needed us to prime a project, we absolutely can do that. But I would say in traditional sense, we work more as a subcontractor than anything else.
Okay. So now you're fairly fresh to the role of president. You took over in the just months into the pandemic, and that inserted a lot of kind of uncertainty into the business climate. Has the pandemic changed the way you approach leadership at a company level?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So from a risk management standpoint, going into the pandemic, I don't think anybody, you know, who was managing personnel at the time really understood, you know, the implications that COVID was going to have on business management and personnel. I mean, immediately you went to all offsite personnel, keeping business units separated from each other so you could limit sickness within the company. There's a lot that I think everyone learned from COVID in 2020.
So UMA is poised to expand with a new headquarters, and you've characterized the company as growing rapidly. What does that look like? And what are you expanding your services and growing existing business, or are you doing both?
So over the last 5 years, we've really developed the growth of our business and our model to trend upward over the next 10 to 15 years. And we're not the same company we were 5 years ago, and we won't be the same company we are today in 5 more years. We continue to buy new equipment to make us more productive. We continue to buy bigger equipment to make us more productive. And such, we've outgrown the facility that we're in now, and we need a new facility to be able to just store our equipment, to be able to move our equipment from job to job and efficiently work on it.
So I read recently that this new headquarters that you're building, it's on enough land to have extra space to lease. Is that the company plan? And if so, can you talk a little bit about why that might be important for a company like UMA?
Yeah, so as we're growing and we're getting into different business segments, potentially manufacturing might be a business arm that we want to go into in the future. I believe that diversification in a business is important to the stability of the overall corporation. As the company grows larger and larger, you can't pigeonhole yourself into one business type and expect to be successful at that.
From a planning perspective, is diversification like that kind of, is that how you envision the company, or is that kind of a backstop, kind of rainy day fund type of approach?
No, so diversification is everything about our business growth model. So the more diversified we can become, the more stable we can be as a company. So if one market segment takes a dip, you know, let's say that they stop building hospitals, right? That's not a huge focus of our business. And so, you know, we would not see a huge impact on our bottom line, you know, because of that. Or if of a state, you know, like the North Carolina Department of Transportation this year, ran out of money. And they actually had to shut jobs down. And since we were not completely focused just in that one business segment, it didn't really impact us that much. However, there's a lot of companies that are, you know, totally dependent upon the North Carolina Department of Transportation for funds. You know, there's a lot of these really small bridge contractors, and, you know, it decimated business because, you know, they had 4, 5, 6 bridges going with the state, and the state came and just stopped their project. And, you know, if you're stuck in this one business segment, if something like that happens, I mean, you have no diversification in your portfolio, and it could bankrupt you.
Absolutely. Let's talk drilling. What type of equipment do you guys run right now, and what does a typical project look like?
So we run Casa Grande equipment, Hute equipment, Camacho equipment, TEI, Ward. So our portfolio of drilling equipment is pretty diverse. Some manufacturers lend more to certain markets better than others. I wouldn't say that we have a favorite brand over one or the other. They're all unique. So some of the recent drilling difficulties that we've been, we're working in Charleston, South Carolina currently, where you have an overlayer of silt and sand, and then you get into a marl layer, which is really unique to drill in. And then if you move all the way up to, you know, Washington, D.C., Maryland, New Jersey area, you get into glacial tillage, you know, which is its own animal. And then if you move up into Asheville or Eastern Tennessee, you get into karst topographies, limestone, even really dense granodiorites, you know, that are 30,000+ PSI rock, which is extremely difficult, you know, to manage, especially when you get into a situation where a contractor doesn't understand how to blast. And you get a big chunk of fractured rock that you have to try to build something with them because they didn't blast it correctly. So drilling conditions for us, you know, we work in a big region of the country. And so project to project, they can vary, you know, drastically.
So what projects are you excited about right now? What's something you got going on that would just dazzle our drillers out there?
So we're working on the I-26 widening project in Nashville. And it's 120,000 square feet of soil nail walls. It's the largest soil nail wall project the North Carolina Department of Transportation has ever done. This past year, we finished a wall from the North Carolina Department of Transportation that was 46,000 square feet. Also a really, really big wall. One of the walls in Asheville we're building is 32,000 square feet right now. So I would think just from the size of some of the projects that we have going on currently, I think that people would be excited about that. The project in Asheville has a tremendous amount of rock, and the contractor that's working on it has had some difficulties with the blasting of the rock with some overshots of it. And so, you know, we've had to contend with that during the excavations of the walls.
So when you're building walls of that scale, do they let you, like, carve your initials into them or something? UMA was here. I mean, that's impressive. You want to scream that from the hills.
Yeah. So, you know, luckily we can market the walls. You know, there's no take back from the Department of Transportation on what we can do. You know, a lot of our Department of Defense customers that we work for, a lot of the places that we go, you know, we're not allowed to market anything or talk about the projects. And there's some really neat places, you know, that we work for the Department of Defense. And it would be great if, you know, we could talk about those projects, but unfortunately can't. But luckily, you know, some government entities like cities, you know, municipalities and states, they don't have an issue with you, you know, marketing their projects. So the North Carolina Department of Transportation, VDOT, TDOT, you know, all the states around us, you know, have allowed us to at least market their work that we're doing for them.
So you're a second generation leader in the company. What's that like from an expectation standpoint?
I feel like any second generation or third generation leader has a higher expectation, you know, from their coworkers or employees to overachieve more than, you know, necessarily maybe somebody who's a founder of a corporation. And I think there's a stigma that surrounds that. And, you know, there's some people that care about their image, and there's others that don't, you know, and the few that don't care about their image are the ones that put a bad name to the people that try really hard.
So you're a 17-year-old company. Obviously, a lot in drilling has advanced, and you know, from the early 2000s to today, what type of challenges are you seeing on projects that you didn't have from, you know, in the beginning?
Well, I mean, size for one of them. So when we first got in the drilling business, we bought a MP250 from TEI Rock Drills. A guy named Ronnie Edwards from Asheville Bit and Steel actually taught me how to use it. And, you know, for a long time, I would sell a job and do a job and sell a job and do a job. And that's how we got into the drilling business. And just through the years and through time, you know, as we've bought bigger equipment and we've landed bigger projects, you know, we've gone from, you know, 4 micropiles to, you know, the I-26 Whiting project is a $9 million project. You know, so I mean, just the expanse that we've seen in the project size and project diversity has been great.
So paint a picture for me. What does UMA look like in 5 years? What's your plan look like for this company?
Well, hopefully we're not in the same company we are today in 5 years. You know, I hope that we're better, we're more diverse, we have better equipment. You know, we're really lucky that we have retained a lot of people through the years, and we have retained a lot of corporate knowledge as we've grown. And, you know, that corporate knowledge is really what helps set us apart, you know, from some of our competitors, you know, the ability to handle difficult projects and difficult drilling conditions.
So you're growing. We have been talking about this infrastructure bill for as long as I can remember at this point. I feel like 2011 it popped up, and then, you know, we thought maybe 2014. How is the infrastructure bill with what you guys are doing? How is that going to impact your business? Are you guys going to have to scale more, or do you have plans for it?
Yeah, so we're completely prepared to grow more. We doubled in revenue in 2020 during the COVID pandemic. I could easily see us, when the infrastructure bill coming out, just because of the position we're in the market, doubling in size again. And that's exactly what we want to do. You know, we're on that growth trend to continue to do that. So bring on the infrastructure bill, you know, bring on bigger work. You know, we're ready for it.
So hiring then, what are you, what is your plans, or how do you bring on, you know, new employees into the drilling industry? We kind of started this with, you know, the industry kind of drags us in. You know, obviously we're a self-taught tribal industry, and you're in the micro piles, and the aspect that you're in isn't as widely thought of as much as we say conventional mud rotary and the guys that are like, oh yeah, I see this geotech rig with augers. How do you find drillers?
Well, I think it's best to promote within. And so, you know, during our growth model, you know, we're always looking to be able to promote within and retain people, you know, that are going to be good for the business in the long term. So if we can bring somebody in that works as a laborer, that moves to a foreman, that moves to a superintendent or assistant superintendent or even senior superintendent position, you know, those people through time are what's going to help build us. You know, it's not me, you know, that makes this place work. It's the people that are doing the work every day that make this place work.
So I'm wondering, to kind of dovetail with that, we hear a lot in the drilling industry about there not being enough young applicants. There aren't a lot of people that want to come into this industry. It seems like you're doing a lot of hiring. Is that what you're seeing? Are you seeing enough qualified candidates out there?
No. So, you know, if there was anything that I could say to someone that was in politics today is, you know, we don't have enough people that want to work. You know, right now, if we have job boards running on easily 10 websites, and we could hire 10 people today, you know, I mean, just field labor people. You know, we have other positions that are open. We have superintendent positions that are open, foreman positions that are open, sales positions, engineering. And those are people, you know, that we probably will eventually recruit, you know, from one of our competitors. But, you know, let's focus on just laborers, because this is an issue that all industries have. Restaurants have, general construction has, drilling has. And you can't hire somebody that has a driver's license, that wants to work, and will show up to work. It's just not possible. I mean, our HR department will have 10 interviews set up every week to hire people, at best, one person will be hired out of that because 9 of the people won't show up to interviews. And then if they do fill out paperwork, there's a real good chance they're not going to show up to work on Monday. It's a real issue.
Yeah, and that's kind of puzzling to me because for a high growth company like yours, if you can sign on with a company like that, things change a lot and you could move up fairly quickly in a company like that, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're constantly putting on new crews. We're constantly buying new equipment. And, you know, if you were to start here, you know, in a junior position, I mean, you could easily move up through the ranks in a couple of years and be at a position, you know, where you're making well more than what a college educated person would make. So it's not difficult to do that, you know, but the work drive that people have or work ethic that people have today is, you know, nothing, you know, like it should be. And I don't know how we put that back into people. You know, maybe the next generation that comes through will rehab the work ethic that 2 generations ago had.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I have one last question. Now, as you seem to have fairly, I don't know, equally divided experience between kind of textbook and field. I mean, it sounds like you were out drilling, you know, it sounds like you're a college grad, right? Now, did you set out to become this, you know, company leader that you are and rise up through the ranks like that? Or like, was this intentional, or, you know, the plan all along to kind of give the company or deliver the company over to second generation leadership like this? Have you been grooming for this?
No, I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, when they're 20 years old, knows what they want to do in life. You know, as much as people say, you know, they know what they want to do, you know, when they're in their 20s, I mean, you don't know. And, you know, what I thought I knew when I was 20 is, you know, nothing like what I actually know today. And the growth of the company, did I see us growing this much, this fast? You know, no. You know, but now that we're on that trajectory, do I see us doubling in size? You know, absolutely. Do I see us acquiring other businesses? Absolutely. Do I see us, you know, continue to hire more people? Yes, absolutely. So, no, I mean, I don't think that when we started this business that, you know, I saw us becoming what we are today. But I mean, I'm glad that we're on this journey, and it's been an exciting one.
Well, with that note, we'll wrap up today's episode. So thanks again, Brian, for being on the show. You know, I'm fascinated that you've mentioned a couple of times that you've doubled in size a couple of times in the recent years, right? That is just explosive growth. I can't even wrap my mind around that. That's so good luck to you. I'm you know, that's a great trajectory to be on. What are your thoughts, Brock?
Well, it's great to talk about drilling outside of our standard, you know, geotechnical, you know, water well drilling, and letting the industry, at least from the driller standpoint, listen to, you know, the other opportunities that are out there, and how much drilling drives infrastructure, period, from the engineering aspect to our highways, to our bridges, to, you know, major construction. And it's really cool to hear what UMA is doing.
So, Brian, where can our audience find out more about you and UMA?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. You can find us at www.team-uma.com. You can reach us, 336-992-0746 is our office number. If you guys have any questions, my email address is on the company's website. Please feel free to, you know, reach out to me. You know, I love talking to people, especially competitors, businesses that are growing, people that are in my position, you know, currently. You know, if anybody wants to have a conversation about something, I'm here for that.
Fantastic. Well, you can find fresh episodes of our show on the Driller website or on Apple Podcasts every other week. Search Drilling Insight and hit subscribe. Visit thedriller.com for the latest industry news and views. And don't forget to follow us on the usual social media channels. So until next time, this is Drilling Insight.
Thank you.